implementation of the strategic financial management by the entity. Based on a program, we've got a center with us this morning. I have received no apology for this meeting. On the list that I have, don't have any formal written apology. So we will proceed in the manner, and suspect that members who are coming are still delayed for this meeting. We are going to receive the presentation, and then following from the presentation, we will get into discussions and engagement, questions and discussions from the entity. We'll follow the same format, members, that we get the presentation, and then the members ask your questions or comments. We will make reference either to the presentation or to the actual accomplishment of the entity. Welcome, Chairperson. I noted that the delegation from Centec is led by Chairperson Melo. We'll allow them to introduce themselves. And I would appeal again with the department to kindly ensure that when they send, and I think I'm not going to say it again, colleagues, because it's just becoming something that now I'm sounding like an old record, but to send us an accurate indication of the department. Because I do not have any apology, and I have a delegation that is expected to be led by the acting team who is not here. So I'm just appealing that can we just get the department to clear itself and make sure that what comes to the department, to the committee, is actually what is going to happen, because it doesn't assist us. Over to Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll do the introduction first. My name is Makhatu Melo. I'm the Chairperson of the Board of Centec.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. My name is Mlambi Boy, the CEO of Centec.
Morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Hanki Matavani. I'm the CEO of Centec.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm Centec Asipa, the company secretary of Centec.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Aubrey Nekande, currently the acting CFO of Centec.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mondin Leleni. I'm responsible for government relations at Centec.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to honorable members. My name is Omega Shelembe. I am from the department. I am the deputy responsible for SOC oversight. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Ogana Mzungu from the ministry.
I think that's fine. So, what is the person for your remarks, and then we can move straight to the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, officials from the department and the BDG. Chairperson, we have been invited, we'll be presenting the corporate plan for 2016 to 2019. And in this plan, I'll just point out some of the highlights, primarily being that, as you'll see, that towards the end of this period, that the business is going to be coming under pressure, Centec, primarily because we are not servicing a growing customer base with the delays in licensing, which means that the revenues that we are anticipating are not, the sector is not growing as much as we would have liked to in terms of the delays in licensing, primarily TV as well, which is a large contributor to that. The company is also carrying quite a bit of strain in terms of the cost of dual elimination. But fortunately, in the last few weeks, we have had some good news from the department in terms of additional funding. So in response to that, the company is taking a lot of steps to look at other revenue streams, which we shared last year, but it's now going to be something that is the KPI of quite a few of the executives. And in fact, in the process of appointing the new CFO, that was pointed out as something that is, has become an imperative of the business. The support of the COO will be focused on that, and of course under the leadership of the CEO. We still do expect the company to meet some of the governance and statutory requirements to get clean audit, but what we're seeing going forward is that it's going to be a tougher trading environment and we'll be facing challenges, and the company is gearing itself to be able to handle that. I will now hand over to the CEO, Mr. Mlamlepoi, for him to go through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman, Honorable Chair, members of the committee, officials from the department. We would like to thank you for the opportunity to come and present to you our plans for the financial year 2016-2019. It is a time for us to review and think about how we do business at Centec. And we have developed for ourselves a motto that says, how can we do things better? So this year we're driven by that motto that says, do things better for the future of Centec and for the future of the country. We're a company which has got a vision of providing sustainable communication platform services. So in this presentation, we'll talk through, I'll just briefly touch on the market outlook, the business strategy, the strategic products, the key performance indicators, financial plans, and conclusions. That will be the roadmap for our presentation. So as a reminder, we need to remind the committee and the public that our responsibility and mandate is to provide, and our mission is to provide and operate communication network services that enable affordable, universal access and universal services to digital content services within the context of South Africa. And this is underpinned by our values, which we hold very dear and very close to our hearts as we build our organization, which is the integrity, quality customer service, innovation, accountability, and social responsibility. Looking at the market in which we are operating, we are faced with a situation in the country where, as the Chairperson has indicated, the market is not growing as fast as possible. So due to delays in the launch of DTT, many households have acquired satellite services to access their digital channels. And there is competition, services from multi-source pay services and free-to-air services from that we are providing from Freevision and data provided by OpenView HD, which launched in 2013. So these have made some inroads. The territorial sector has subsequently declined in size, although once we launch DTT, we expect this to grow quickly. But this is subject to the licensing process of the regulator. OTT, which is over-the-top video or video on demand, has been gaining ground in South Africa over the past years. We've seen the launch of services like Netflix in the country, which competes directly with the current broadcasting services. So broadband penetration and download speeds have acted as inhibitors, although both are slowly improving due to the implementation of fiber optics in most areas, especially in the urban areas. Telecom's LTE offers speeds which are as high as 90 megabits per second downloads, and they have partnered with other operators such as MultiChoice to provide on-demand services. The players tending to lose from these OTT services are the established paid television operators like MultiChoice. I'm not going to go through the details of the market outlook in the interest of time, Jefferson. I would like to just mention that the market of radio We're providing services to 21 commercial radio services and 18 SABC public service radios. And we're also providing services to about 240 community radio stations, which include the new 20 community stations which were launched in the past financial year. The radio services are not growing as fast in country, I think because of the limitation in the availability of spectrum, the FM spectrum in particular. If you go to the internet space, this has grown quite significantly over the years, and the penetration is actually growing very fast, albeit from a very low base. If one looks at the penetration of smartphones, which is a driver for video on demand services and watching video clips whilst you are mobile, this is not necessarily going to replace television, but it is another platform, a second screen basically. You cannot use your mobile phone as a first screen. So internet growth is bringing to the market an opportunity for, first of all, for growth in the areas of new revenue for the operators, but secondly, it is becoming, in the long run, it could become a threat to the conventional way of doing business when it comes to television. I think on the positive side, what internet will bring for us as a country, especially in areas where there is broadband availability, it brings to us an opportunity where you can have a hybrid of broadcasting and internet, and then you're able to do the online video on demand, because if you have internet access, you can do streaming, and at the same time you are able to do your consumption of video services using the conventional broadcast services or broadcast platforms. That is how the market looks. It is not growing as fast as we wish it to grow. And one of the issues that we want to do, Jefferson, is to encourage the regulator to license more so that we can give the growth industry. Now moving on to the FinTech business strategy. What do we do as FinTech in our strategy? In this MTF, FinTech business strategy will remain aligned and guided by the FinTech strategy goals and those of the NDP and government's 2020 strategy for the ICT sector. That is the global digital multi-channel broadcasting and content distribution landscape rapidly changing fundamentally for both FinTech and the broadcasting industry at large. So there are challenges that we're facing, and we are strategizing to navigate around all these challenges we face in the industry. Our subsequent corporate plan articulated the company's business strategy to consolidate its position as a leading provider of open access communications network infrastructure to the broadcasting industry. So all focus is on customer engagement and business sustainability. It's our focus for the year. We then decided as a company that we have to structure our business into three core business areas. We're not changing much the business model that we've been operating over the years, but what we have done here is to create focus so that we don't have fragmentation in our business, but we create different areas of operation which are coordinated centrally. The core areas then that form part of our overall center business are multimedia services. What FinTech has been strong at and will continue to do that business, which is broadcasting signal distribution services, including radio and television. Second one will be the infrastructure managed services, which is an area of expansion into the future. And we're also focusing on connectivity services, which is an area which we have committed to explore and grow into in the MTF. There will be a strong focus on research and innovation, supported by skills development. We are focusing on making sure that we have got skilled force within our organization so that we are able to deliver our services within the digital era, because the skills we require for delivery of services in this era are different from the skills we required during the era of analog. So we do have also a focus on wireless broadband connectivity, which will basically look at low bandwidth services, not internet, but you're looking at transactional services, and that's what we'll be doing in the next financial, or rather in the MTF. All these are supported by the functions we support, which is technology, marketing and sales, and also we have finance, HR, legal services, which support all these. And we have decided to make sure that within our organization, research and innovation is cutting across each and every area of our business, so that whatever we do, whether it be in finance or in HR, we must be innovative in everything that we do, facing the changes in the marketplace that we are operating in. As we said before, in terms of our content and multimedia services, we have services such as FM. Here we've got about 823 FM transmitter sites nationally running on FM, which is 88 to 108 megahertz. And we're providing services to the public broadcasting, commercial broadcasting, and community broadcasting. So we'll continue to optimize our network for radio, and we improve our services and the areas where radio is not accessible. And we are committed as Centel to provide, to fill those gaps. But that is driven largely by the request from broadcasters like the ABC as a public broadcaster. And they have a license to close the gaps or fill the gaps, and we are able to deliver the service to the public broadcaster. What is the future for radio? We looked at this and said, well, DAB Plus, which is a digital platform for radio, is an area that we need to grow into as Centel. And we've done our trials and proved that the technology has matured and it is ready to be commercialized. Finished our report and presented it to the authority for them to consider making plans in terms of regulations, and to will be also looking at what is happening in the ICT policy in terms of what can be done to make sure that they expand radio. But digital, even in radio, is the future because there's more capacity available there. So we envisage that then DAB Plus will exist alongside FM in the next 10 to 15 years, challenge being the availability of handsets and the cost of handsets. But I think the market will sort that one out. The second part on the radio side, we have a medium wave, which is a mature technology for broadcasting and on radio. But it is not that attractive because of the cost of maintenance of that service. Shortwave is a service that we have had for many years, and I think if you all remember many years ago, where you could receive radio from very far away and you see the hideaway and listen to that radio, that was shortwave. We were able to receive information from very far from South Africa. Shortwave then will remain a service that will provide parts. We're reviewing that because technology is mature, it's becoming obsolete and becoming expensive. Very few people are providing shares on shortwave, and therefore we need to look at an alternative way of if there's no growth in that technology in the surrounding countries to South Africa, which is where we see as a possibility for growth in shortwave. In our evaluation of that market, if we see that there is no potential for growth, we'll have to come maybe with a different decision in the next 20 years. Terrestrial TV is an area that we are operating in currently. Analog TV signal system remains the major revenue contributor to Centel. More than 60% or so of our revenue comes from there. We'll give you the details later on. But the future of sustainability of Centel is intricately linked to the successful launch of archive of fitware commercial DTT services. This is basically driven by the availability of set-top box to all the users in the market out there. In the project of DTT set-top box manufacturing and all that, our transition from analog to digital is linked directly to everybody having access to the set-top boxes. So as part of digital migration, just to re-emphasize, Process Center has developed an analog switch-off tariff model, which we have shared with our customer, and there's been a buy-in on that tariff. And we keep on reviewing the tariff to see if we are able to still maintain our business moving forward. So we've also issued and communicated an analog switch-off plan to the shareholder and also to the DOC project management office to indicate to them that this is the logical plan that we need to carry out for us to be able to transition from analog to digital in an efficient way. But then the growth of DTT is also, we anticipate that it is directly linked to the additional licensing of another multiplex, which is Max 3. If I will license Max 3, they were in the process of licensing new broadcasters, but we have read and seen that the decision was that none of those qualified. But I think ICASA will continue to develop a licensing regime for multiplex 3. But currently there is sufficient capacity on DTT MAX 1 and MAX 2 for the SABC ETV community broadcaster to be able to carry their channels on those MAXes, because SABC has got, for instance, the capacity to carry about 16 channels. So there is a lot of room for growth for those broadcasters. Also, we do carry business radio and business TV services, which is what we offer to our customers. We offer services like your satellite broadcasting, post VOD, live streaming, and IPTV. That's what we're looking at for the future. Though, moving on to the content platform services. And business applications and audiovisual, I'm not going to go through the details of that, Chairperson. This is just to emphasize to the committee that we have looked at how we can diversify our revenue stream, FinTech, and instead of staying only on broadcast signal distribution, but we're looking at other platform services for both DTH and terrestrial. We're looking at audiovisual on-demand services that we'll provide to the broadcasters, not as a separate service, but as a value-added services to our broadcasters. We don't anticipate spectacular revenue to be generated from the video on-demand services. And the reason being that we don't want to compete with our current customers, because we could find ourselves in a difficult situation if we develop a business that is directly competing with our broadcasting customers. So in case, instead of going to those businesses directly, we've decided strategically to provide platform of value-added services to our customers. The other area that we're looking at in terms of value-added services is the hybrid broadcast and smart TV platforms, which again are value-added services. But these are for areas which have got access to internet services. So your hybrid broadcast, hybrid broadband TV is based on you having access to broadband internet services, maybe ADSL high speed and high speed fiber services. And then you can have fast streaming alternatives to enable you to access video content online. And therefore, in this MTL, Centec will continue to develop and implement some of these HBTV TV platforms, but we have not pinned our hopes too high on those technologies because of our current environment. The other service that we see as a very attractive area for us, because we own infrastructure nationwide, which is a very attractive real estate for most or for many operators within the ICT space. And therefore, we decided that Centec, having the capacity to and the ability based on our past experience to manage facilities which are wireless based, so we have decided that we will provide equipment, hosting, and storage services in our sites. And as part of the growing and hosting and storage portfolio, Centec will participate to host and operate a satellite air station at our disaster recovery site in Nazareth. And we're doing this for ourselves as a disaster recovery site, and also to open ourselves up to assist other customers who need such services. So we'll therefore deploy the service on a permanent basis and offer it to our customers. We have in the past been doing facility leasing to our customers, and also to the ICT sector at large. This service will continue to be delivered to our customers into the future. We have access to about 225 sites nationally, and we've got over 300 sites if you include all the other gaps. So our facility listing strategy is to then see how we can monetize most of these sites. And because as we develop, as we grow into digital, an area which was used for analog transmitters, instead of having four racks covering for all our services, Now we're reducing that space and capacity to a single rack, and therefore the space is more available. So we'll provide that to our customers for the purpose of listening to them and providing services to them. Managed network services, I've spoken briefly about that, and then we also have decided servicing to take knowledge and monetize our knowledge, because we've got a high level of expertise within our organization. And we've then decided that consulting services is going to be one of the areas that we need to deal with, or rather we need to explore as a center. And the purpose being there that we need to advise those who need our advice, which is in most cases our neighboring countries in Zedap and Africa, right? And then we provide them with services because of our experience in rolling out the DTT network as we've done in the country. So this particular focus then on our strategy is to expand our business to the rest of Africa during the year 2016 and 2017. We also getting closer to our business areas focus, such as wireless broadband, smart city, and then IoT, public safety services. Those are the services we are exploring and wanting to grow our business into so that it can be sustainable into the future. What are the strategic projects then that we're focusing on as an organization? Internally, we've decided that it is important that we develop our enterprises, suppliers for our enterprise. So ESG, which is also driven by the CPE codes of good practice, which have required us to, as a country and us as an organization, and in particular us as an SOC, to focus on developing suppliers who have not had the opportunity before to participate within the space of ICT. So that's our key focus area. We're going to be spending some of our budget towards developing suppliers for our organization. And human capital development is a key focus that I said earlier on. We have a challenge of, I think, the majority of the technical skills we've seen, most who have been with us for more than 30 years, 40 years even, we're celebrating these years of service. Those technical skills now are retiring, and therefore we're building new skills. So human capital interventions are quite critical. And also it's new skills that we're talking about here, where we think we are in the digital era, and therefore we need to develop and build new skills. DTT consolidation, much as we have covered our country with 84% coverage of terrestrial DTT and the balance being covered by ADTAs, but we then are in the process of stabilizing our network so that we can be able to provide commercial services. And DTT is a platform that we're going to be focusing on to see what other services can we deliver using our DTT services, our DTT network rather. Internally, we have a project that we're upgrading our ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning software, which is SAP. And we have finished our phase one, which was setting the base or the basic infrastructure. Now we're adding services on top of that so that we can automate most of our processes and be able to generate quick management reports, and also to be able to make sure that our data is secure. Facilities management is another key project we're focusing on to develop capacity to attract our more customers to our sites, and also to acquire possibly new sites wherever is possible. Business continuity management has been an area of concern for our board and management, and we have developed a plan, business continuity plan, and that plan now is in the process of being implemented. The implementation of the plan begins in this financial year, and our aim is to make sure that at least by the end of the financial year, we have a disaster recovery site that has been populated to be able to, in case of any disaster on our facility in Honeydew, Rider Gulf, then we can be able to continue with our business, at least as we resource services, which may have been affected by any form of a disaster. What are then the key performance indicators for this year we are moving into? We have done two things, I think, as it has been done in the past, where we look at what are the key areas which the department that we directly report to have put forward as their key strategic goals And then we have indicated in our plans that when the department says we want broadband connectivity that provides secure and affordable access for citizens to education, health, and other government services, then we ask ourselves, how do we participate, how do we support the strategic goal of the shareholder? And we actively involved in assisting the department with the development of the national broadband strategy, and we participate, we will participate in the implementation of the SAE Connect in one way or the other. This is still to be defined in our conversations with the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services. The CENTEP will participate. This is our area of contribution because we are in the wireless space. We will participate in reviewing and updating of the national frequency band, which is what is critical for us, and this is why the mobile operators and the telecoms operators are waiting to see what kind of spectrum are we going to get once we transfer to digital. So we ensure that our network is shielded from any possible cyber attacks. So that is in support of the strategic goal one of the department. Strategic goal two, which is to provide or stable ICT policy and regulatory environment that contributes to the socio-economic development in the country. We, as a state-owned company, we provide input into this development of these policies and regulations, because it is in our interest that there is conducive policy developed for the sector, for the purpose of growth, and we'll continue as a company, therefore, towards implementation of an enterprise supply development strategy that supports local ICT SMEs and SMEs. The strategic number three is developed as a modern and sustainable and competitive portal services. What we do with portal services center, we're saying what we'll do to support is we'll actively participate in the development of these policy papers to advance SAICT policies and programs. Why are we thinking that we can participate in postal services? Because postal is changing and it is encompassing even technologies which are not used before. So as a technology company, we do want to provide support to the department. The strategic goal number four, the inclusive information society and knowledge economy. What is our role as CENTEP? How do we align? We said to ourselves that we will engage and participate and contribute in the development of these plans, which is the e-strategy plan that the government has been talking about for a number of years. Typically, what we do, we use our infrastructure to support the obligation, the government's obligations in relation to national e-strategy. So, number five, this is the optimally functional department and SOCs that effectively deliver on their strategic or on their respective mandates. I think for us here is we center, we will ensure that we have appropriate corporate governance structures and policy to enable effective shareholder oversight. And we have developed this policy and shared them with the department. And we will continue to make sure that our governance structure is assisting us in aligning with what the shareholder is planning to do. Bringing it home now to CENTEP, what are we going to be doing at CENTEP? We've decided that we want to be very focused. We don't want to do 101 things. We want to do 10 things and do them right. We want to be able to come back to you at the end of the financial year and say, all the plans that we have established and developed, we have actually succeeded in delivering on them. So we also link this then to link our KPI to the strategic goals, the one of ensuring that ICT infrastructure is accessible and robust. Internally, what we do in terms of achieving a strategic goal, we have, as I said before, disaster recovery plans and business continuity plans are in place. We'll be establishing a DR disaster recovery site and establishing business continuity plans and implement them this year. So first quarter, second quarter, first year, that is 16-17, we'll build and commission a site, disaster recovery site, and we continue on the following year the development of another BCD, which is business continuity plan for other identified business units. The second KPI for us is to, with a link to the ensuring of high level of customer and stakeholder satisfaction. So our aim is to make sure that we deliver a service and products which are 99.8% in terms of availability. We're committed to that. Our customers are key to us. Our strategic orientation this year says that we need to be customer focused, and therefore we'll improve customer satisfaction and then develop a customer index this year, which we have done baseline plus 5%. In the last year, we achieved 65%, 67% in terms of the customer satisfaction index. And this year, this financial year, which is 2016 and 2017, we'll take then the baseline, which is based on the last 2 years, and then target to hit 5% more than that in terms of our customer satisfaction. And to us, customers includes all those three categories, which is private, public broadcasting, and community broadcasting. And then the other new commercial services based on new businesses that we are starting. Now, strategically, driving organizational performance in order to improve organizational effectiveness. We have set ourselves a target, Jefferson, to say we need to have a high performance team within the organization where we say to ourselves we need to see that everybody, whatever target that has been set for the individuals within the organization, is on average more than 65%. So that's what we're targeting. Everybody must achieve kind of a pass mark of 65% moving forward. So that's 3.2 rating on a scale of 1 to 5. And also in terms of effective management of talent, we face, as I said, with the skill shortage, and therefore we are looking at making sure that we do focus on training plans, and in the current financial year, we will endeavor to meet more than 80% of the approved plans for our organization. Revenue diversification, we need to ensure that our company is sustainable into the future. And therefore, we need to diversify our revenue, and we're looking at international markets. So we're developing a strategy for the 10 African market, and we'll develop and finish a business case this year. And we won't wait until the end of the year, because the business case must be implemented as soon as it is approved by the board. And management will continue to do business development whilst we are busy finalizing our business plan. We will implement effective internal control systems and compliance with applicable legislation so that we can continue achieving clean audits that we have been achieving in the last number of years. We'll also implement ESD and SED initiatives. And here is a question, we're planning to spend for 6% of our annual net profit after tax in this financial year. And this is not a number that we just picked it off of air, but it is a number, a minimum that has been specified by the BBBE Code of Good Practice. Maintaining a healthy EBIT before, which is an earnings before income tax, and here we will maintain earnings, will remain positive, but our earnings will, because of the challenge in our business, we're targeting to earn 5 million EBIT this year, which means the company will remain profitable, but we're not going to have sufficient resources into the future. Why is the EBIT reduced, you may ask? Look at the previous financial year. This has been reduced simply because of the changes, because we have funded mandate, which is dual elimination, which are being funded by the National Treasury. But currently, that commitment for this financial year has not come forth. We've been told about the challenges that government has, and therefore, the same tells the same. The best we can do without funding is that 5 million. However, this, I think as the chairperson has indicated earlier on, this has improved because the DTBS has come to our rescue by giving us some part funding for our dual elimination so as to relieve that pressure that we having, but we still remain under pressure to raise another about 60 million rand or so. But if you look at the years moving forward, so the first year, which is this year, our EBIT is low at 5 and it will be low the next financial year. We made an assumption here that we will switch off analog in 2018-2019. So if that doesn't happen, What it means is that our habits will remain at that level, or even maybe it will be depleted over the forthcoming years because of our cost of dual illumination if we don't get the funding that we require. But we're trusting that support we're getting from the department will lead us to get more funding, if not through funding, but at least part funding. So those are our annual plans, Jefferson. We've got quarterly plans, which we're drilling into. I would like not to go into the details of the quarterly plans, but they speak to the annual plans, which we will be measuring us on. So I will skip the quarterly plans and go to the financial plans. How do we keep this organization afloat as center board and management? The financial plan provides some insight onto the investment and financial decision made by Centec in building a financially sustainable company within the framework of the overall financial strategy. And we are not unaware of the challenges that are facing the market. Our customers are quite under pressure, as everyone else in the marketplace. So at Centec, we are streamlining our business processes and we implement initiatives that positively drive shareholder value. Our company projects continued growth in the revenues from continuing operations over the MTF period, resulting in forecasted overall profits. So we'll remain in black, and we remain optimistic that whatever is happening, we can try and manage. The growth in revenues is mainly attributable to Centec's business model, which we're wanting to aggressively make it more diverse than it has been in the past. The point of re-emphasis here is saying dual illumination will continue during the applicable period. The Centec will be running DTT and analog networks simultaneously. It's just the cost that it's an unavoidable cost, unfortunately, so we'll continue to do dual illumination. The funding of this dual illumination continues to pose a risk to our business, and we're indicating that in the summary in terms of the building of our reserves over the years on the coming 3 years. Some highlights on our performance financially. In the interest of time, setting our revenue, we estimate that the revenue in the 2017 and 18 are based on the projected financial year 2015 figures, and we're projecting an increase of an increase in our revenue, which is in line with the CPI of October 2015. Our expenses, we remain quite aggressive in containing our expenses, and our EBIT has spoken to this one. We are budgeting an EBIT of 5 million because of the previous challenges of funding for dual illumination. If one looks at the financial position, Karen will go through some details on this one. We have to make sure that our challenge of keeping our infrastructure alive and healthy is not compromised, and therefore we have to spend on our on maintaining our equipment and our size. So if you look at our cash flow, Centec is not envisaging the need for financing activities. There's no cash flows over the next MTF period. So the cash flow from operating activities has significantly reduced over the MTF period due to non-funding. I think I've mentioned this, let me skip it and move forward to capital expenditure. We have budgeted in the financial year 2017 that we will spend on our CapEx in the region of 500 million. So that's what we've budgeted for. And it is important for Centec to continue spending on its infrastructure, because if we don't want to run a risk that in 3 years' time our infrastructure collapses and we are not able to deliver services to the nation. So therefore, our reserves, we have allocated funds on our reserves so that we can be able to stabilize our infrastructure and be able to make sure that we do preventative maintenance on our site and our transmitters and keep our organization in a strong, robust position moving forward. Lastly, the corporate plan of this year is presented with key focus on ensuring sustainability and accessibility of infrastructure, both of business areas, sustainability of current business
and development of human capital and human resources. Digital migration remains main strategic project, and we are continuing doing what needs to be done to deliver a reliable infrastructure for DTT to our customers and to the nation. Funding of DTT remains a key risk for us into the future, thus leading to a low EBIT. Lastly, the company remains financially stable, and we make every and all efforts are being put in place to strengthen the organization. And we remain optimistic, Jefferson, and we keep asking ourselves, how can we do it better into the future? Thank you.
Thank you very much to both the chair, board, and CEO. I'm going to open the members to comment, because I think something that I need to flag. We had a meeting with ISAS, and maybe there is a meeting. We are committed to calling a meeting on the DTT rollout, which I understand is going to have a huge impact on the finances of Sentech. But just to flag formally to Sentech, and maybe the shareholder as TPS is going to have to help both Sentech and USASA to sit, because from what we gathered this week, it was on Tuesday, the DTT rollout has some challenges, and the likelihood of meeting the initial deadlines and just the targets is way out of line. So if you are to look at what they are proposing, we're likely to meet the DTT rollout plan by 2020. And that, based on what you are presenting to us, is going to have a huge impact on that. So I thought, let me just put that for you as Sentech, and possibly from our side as the portfolio committee, jointly with the portfolio committee on communications, meet as soon as possible to have that meeting, so that all role players, the impact of the delay of the project, what's going to happen will help. But more so, and I'm looking at the DDT, it's going to be important at least for now for Sentech and Nisasa to share some of the plans and the rollout, so that Sentech can do an assessment of the impact of the delay on their work. That would be very important. I thought, before I open for members, let me just flag that, so that the colleagues from Sentech are quite aware of what the delays are. The members, can I just note for comments and questions? We'll have the first round and second round, so we should do that. Honorable Shin. Honorable Mandini, Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Sotetsi of Sotetsi, and Honorable Sia. And that's for the members.
Thank you, Jefferson. I gather from the guts of your presentation here that you are one of the three entities that is going to form the National Broadband Network for part of SA Connect. I mean, are you going to be going into competition with other network providers? Because you have the license to do that. But are we looking at you as being a competitor to the other broadband networks, and particularly the mobile networks? I mean, are you going to be going into competition with the likes of MTN and Vodacom and Cell C to provide mobile broadband as part of SA Connect, rather than just focusing on your traditional broadcasting customers? If I could have some feedback on that. Also, I was concerned to see that the dual illumination process has never been allocated. Why is this? Because dual illumination has always been part of the digital migration process, and now you're busy with an unfunded mandate, which is jeopardizing your financial sustainability. Whose responsibility was that? I mean, it used to be obviously Department of Communications, but now there's a split, so no one knows who's paying for what and who's responsible for what. But surely, if DOC is responsible for the digital migration process, they should have budgeted for this. Why did they not? And why now? I can see you report to the Department of Telecommunications, but digital migration is not really our responsibility. It's DOC. So can you please explain what that is and what the dual illumination costs you anticipate are going to be between now in the last year and 2019, when hopefully the whole thing will have been transitioned. Then I wanted to go on to your shortage of broadcasting customers, your TV new TV stations. We know just recently that ICASA has turned down the free-to-air commercial broadcasters that applied, or the potential free-to-air broadcasters that applied for licenses that we turned down. But what happened to the 5 subscription-based TV operators that were given temporary licenses in 2014? As far as I know, ICASA has not made a decision on those. I think someone was going to take ICASA to the public protector on that, because one of them actually got the broadcasting rights for the Bafana matches and got that from SABC. So since SABC is now in competition with these people, the whole licensing process seems to have stalled. Do you know if that has been granted, or what do you know about them? Because, I mean, this is potential revenue for you, as you've been denied because bureaucracy and perhaps other interference from the other broadcasters who feared a loss of business to them. And I know the advertising industry is a little concerned about having too many broadcasters out there. This affects the way they make their money. Yes, you're obviously concerned about the digital divide widening, because we're not getting out, we're not freeing up the spectrum for the use of the wide spaces. It's slow getting, and the allocation system as well, we're not getting broadcasting internet services out to all of the disadvantaged or previously disadvantaged areas. Have you any idea what that is costing? What is your potential loss of revenue in the delay in rolling out the set-top boxes and the delay in switching off the analog signal? Do you have any idea, A, what that's costing you financially, and B, the potential impact that those bureaucratic delays and legal delays are having on breaching the digital divide? I think I'll leave it there for now, Jenny.
Yes.
Thank you, Jen. How many vacants you have, and how many females do you have or you have employed at a professional level? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. It's always good to see Centec for the committee. It's interesting you're presenting a strategic plan and I noticed the position for executive strategy is vacant. Have you filled that position yet, or can you give an idea of how far down the road you are with that? In terms of community radio, are you finding that some community radio stations are having a problem paying their licensing charges, for example, to ICASA, and how does this affect your ability to provide those services, if at all? In terms of coverage for digital terrestrial television, unless there's no change in the stats you provided from last year to this year, does that mean you've effectively rolled out that plan and completed, and now you're focusing on just maintaining the network that you've put in place? And then just building on what Honorable Shin was saying, perhaps I can just narrow it down. For 2015, for this year, and then obviously going forward to now 2020, I'd also be interested to know what you estimate those costs of dual elimination to be. I think that's a very important question. And then in terms of your labor relations, I know last year or the year before there was a small strike or some industrial action going on. I just want to know if that's all been sorted out and how you would rate your labor relations overall. And then, as part of your training plans, do you have a targeted adversity program? I'm just thinking of a skills pipeline coming through, especially among young people. Do you have a targeted adversity program? And if so, how many recipients of adversaries do you fund? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. On key performance indicators, we have here Centec to ensure that it address are shielded from cyber attacks. Having this serious challenge in the country, do we have capacity to deal with this challenge? And how far can we move to save the nation from these attacks? We also have a promotion of a transformation of the ICT sector through ICT SMEs. In many presentations, it is indicating that SMEs are not given the degree, attention for its development. And when you say you're going to promote the transformation, it means already you have something in place. Can you give the status quo so that you can be able to measure progress moving forward?
and to ensure the ICT infrastructure is accessible, robust, and reliable. Do you have a contingency plan in the event you come across, you know, or you suffer maybe power failure? From that era, but there's a lot of promotion in, you know, the sustainability of the power failure. We don't experience that anymore, but we are not sure, we cannot guarantee that we won't have that challenge again. Should we have power failure again, how are you going to ensure this rehabilitation? And on sustaining your finances, given the economic situation in the country, and you know, the ever increasing inflation, also with the potential challenges of labor demand, how are you going to ensure this financial sustainability? And also talk about the fund of world nation continues to pose a risk in a center business. How are you going to ensure that you sustain your finances? Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Thank you for the presentation. I think it's a very good presentation, and I must say it was the report. It was good reading. It looks a lot. Quality documents, good information, etc. I really want to commend for that. Jefferson, secondly, I would just like to express my concern, and the Jefferson has already alluded to that, and that is the unfortunate sort of situation where the dual elimination period is going to almost triple Centec in the time to come. And that was one of the concerns that were raised many years ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago already, because Centec fortunately always said for as long as there is a specific subsidy for that dual elimination period, it would be fine. But thereafter you cannot maintain the system. It's as simple as that. So what initiatives have you taken so far, and to what extent did you receive the necessary support from the department, from Treasury, etc.? So is there any green light in the tunnel, or is it like a train coming down a tunnel on you? Then I would like to ask, during the budgetary review process, the committee made specific recommendations, and I wanted to just remind you that one of it was to ensure that there's a strategy that will benefit the ICT SME when you procure goods and services. Have you done so? Do you plot it to determine how many of those have you been able to accommodate, so that we actually work from sort of gradually building up a relationship to strengthen the sector, SMEs, etc. Lastly, one of government's serious challenges in all entities, agencies, you name it, is procurement and then payment that takes place without making sure that the service is delivered, or whatever was procured is delivered in full or to the required standard. Now, what have you done so far? Because that was also one of the recommendations, and that is to improve your procurement systems. Make sure that no money is paid out in full without services being rendered, because that is, in any case, in contravention of the PFMA. And when we strengthen Centec, the systems that you will implement is going to be crucial to ensure that you maintain it and to improve your sustainability. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much. I think, let me echo firstly the sentiments raised by members. And just say to the department, there's something that you're doing right with Centec, and I hope you can do it right with the others. Because one of the things, maybe let me just go, for example, you look at page 7-8 of the strike plan, a clear undertaking and explanation of who is in the board, their experience in the sector, that explains why you'd have the quality of an organization that we have in project. And maybe it's something that we should be asking the department, shouldn't that be standard for the entities? You know, to say, these are the things that you need to report to. Issues around their plans, the take best practice. I mean, we said to Sapa the other day that it's good that they include a target of a clean audit in their plan, in their corporate plan, because it helps to make sure that the entity achieves that. It's something that they are gauging themselves against, they target them, and you find it again here on Sunday. And it explains why they'll get clean audit, because they're committed to doing it and they're monitoring it. I'm just flagging it to the department to say, surely best practices that are coming from other entities should be taken to others as a form of ensuring that there is some level of performance across the board in the telecoms portfolio. So I just thought, because I looked at this and I thought this is quite impressive, to be able to give in a sense of the people who are board of directors in the entity and their years of experience and what do they have, and then it shows that you hear the sentiment from members of the quality of work, because they understand the sector, they understand the entity that they are dealing with. So that's what I'm just flagging. But there's one concern from both Central and the shareholder in terms of which for me reflects not much communication between the two. If you are to look at page 58, alignment with shareholders' priorities, it means the department has not set their revised priorities with Centec. Because if you look at the Centec, department has revised their priorities which they have submitted to us. They used to be 5, they are now 4. They have removed what reflects on Europe as number 2. Stable ICT policy and regulatory environment that contributes to social economic development in the country. On that table, to revise table strategy plan, they've removed this. Now, so I'm saying, DDG, this is a reflection that there's not enough proper communication between entity and, which is a concern for me. But surely the department should have shared its strategic goals with the entity and how to approve the strategy to come without you verifying that this you should have picked up as the department. That you have reversed your plan and the entity still having the old plans. And maybe talks to the preparation towards the development of strategic plans from the department and the entities. Because surely our expectation is that when you do that, you are sitting together and making sure that there's alignment. Now, I think the issue of dual illumination remains, as I said earlier on, remains a concern where we're sitting, and I think this matter needs to be resolved to the sooner the better, because it can remain human. And I think it's unfair on the part of the entity. The entity was given targets, the entity was given a mandate, they achieved their mandate. Now it's almost like they are being punished for their success. The fact that they were able to meet their targets and do what they were expected to do, now they are sitting with two processes and two systems that they now have to maintain, which was not originally in their plan. So I think it's important, and we know that there should be some assistance in the previous day, but surely the government should be able to pick this up and take the responsibility on it. And I think Honorable McKenzie spoke about the issue of the rollout CEO of the site. I had also, I think, will allow the questions to be answered on, because I made some marks on page 22, so I'll skip it. Allow you to respond, because Honorable McKenzie raised around the issues of the site. I looked at the issue of the renewal on the business model, reflected on page 41, which I think it makes sense. The only hurdle of it is the delay of the GDP, which will have an impact on your work. Now, the other issue I want to speak to is, I think somebody spoke to it, but the issue of the licenses of community radio stations. And because this is something that comes up regularly, I'm not so sure how it could be done, but just to flag it that there's a need for a discussion between the NTEC and MGTC. When they establish and support in some of these entities, how do we create a space for them to of their funding and their sustainability in light of the, their license, having to pay the license fee. And maybe just to check in terms of the process in appointing the CFO, how far are we for the NTT so that we do not have a regression in terms of the issues. I think one notes as well the work that is being put in terms of the HR process and the human resource, yeah, the human resource issues, because this time was where the time we went to Sanchez, this was quite a thing that affect me. So one is encouraged to see the strong part of it coming through and showing the issues around performance management and change leadership. I think quite encouraging, and hopefully the issues around human resource and human resource capital within the entity will be stabilized and resolved. So those are the issues I wanted to raise, and then we can take from here on the other matters. And I'll give to the chair and the team to respond.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Members. Chairperson, I'll just respond to a couple of the points and then hand over to the CEO. The question from Honorable Shin in terms of the direction that Centec is taking, there is no intention for Centec to compete with the mobile operators. The role there is that Centec has historically run, for example, things like VSAT, which is a platform that has capability for broadband, and where that platform can be used would be an opportunity. However, there were also deficiencies and a need for reinvestment in that platform, and the board and it was not financially self-sustaining, so the board took a view for management to scale down the ongoing expansion and to revisit that as a platform. The thinking is that these high fives that Centec has are part of one of the biggest costs that anyone who builds radio network infrastructure, and that Centec can look at, essentially in the facility space, lending its facilities on a commercial basis to other players and looking at supporting them in that, but also that with Centec's knowledge in terms of running these facilities, but also the capability to manage third parties, for example, a lot of municipalities or other organs of state have their own radio networks. Centec has the skills to start managing those in a manner where any other player that is part of the process of delivering can play in there. So that is the view and the approach where Centec will play the part. Also, Centec does not own a lot of the spectrum anyway, but that is required for the last mile type of services. So Centec would not be looking at that. So in terms of part of the financial sustainability, the CEO pointed out that there is also a focus to mix and tax expertise, to take it across the borders. And that will help two things. One is the diversification of revenue. The other is that, and it links to the problem, is that one of Centec's biggest cost drivers is the cost of satellite communications, which is based on foreign currency, mostly US dollars. And because of the direction that the rand has been taking in relation to US dollars, if we started earning foreign currency in dollars, it helps to mitigate that. But it will also anyway contribute to the revenues of the company. On the CFO process, we were hoping as a board to have the process finalized, but I think there were some clarifications that we had to provide to the minister, and that cost us about 2 weeks, but the recommendations have been put forward for CFO to the minister. And I'll hand over to, there's one other thing in terms of training. You know, one of the things that the board has taken a view on is that as a state-owned entity, and also the board, is that there is always going to be a challenge for a company like Centec to retain skills. And part of making Centec an employer of choice is in training and human capital development as part of that. But also, equally so, it's important that board members are skilled in understanding the business. Because Centec is a unique provider of services, so it's important that when management come and present something to the board, you know, it does not take three or four board meetings because board members cannot quite comprehend what it is at management. So there is also from a retention and also from a fluidity of doing business that where the skills development is acquired across the board to make sure that there is a coherent development of the strategy and management thereof.
Thank you, Jefferson. I'm going to deal with the questions as they were presented, and my colleagues will assist me to close whatever gaps that might have. The question on the impact of the delay on the rollout of TTP, I think maybe you were referring to the rollout of the set-top boxes for the TTP infrastructure is already rolled out. The implication of that is that we will have to run the network at the dual illumination state for as long as we don't have the set-top boxes available in the marketplace. Our infrastructure, obviously, we get to a point where we need to replace it, and it will be said if we have to replace it before we can earn revenue from it. But we're still optimistic that in the next coming 3 years, I think our best efforts, we will be able to get a transition to happen. That is the indication. And also the question was asked about the dual illumination cost. Why was not budgeted for by the Department of Communications? I wouldn't be able to answer that question. Suffice to say that we've had a conversation with a meeting with and discussions with the department on these challenges of PTT, and they are well aware of it, and we have actually shared with them the cost implications, and they have taken everything on board. We are hopeful that the conversation between them and the TTPS, our principal, will land us in a better position in terms of this funding. We've also had a conversation with National Treasury in terms of this DTT fund, dual illumination funding. And why? What has changed? I think that was the kind of the essence of the question. It's because the demand on the fiscals have increased since the time the project was initiated, and therefore government is beginning to prioritize areas which are seen to be quite critical. So this is really what the National Treasury has shared with us. But we are supported by the GTPS in this area, in that they have taken all our costs that we have presented to them for the next MTF. We are looking at a cost of about 140 million, thereabouts. The CFO can confirm the exact numbers, about 140 million rands per annum for dual illumination, and the majority of that cost is on the satellite space segment, because we have to continue to, so space segment plus energy cost. So you can imagine you're running two transmitters, like you're running two cars, one is running standing still, and another one is producing revenue, and we've got this digital car that is standing still and consuming a lot of power and a lot of capacity on the space segment. So those are the cost contract details to dual illumination. The issue around the growth in marketplace, the new TV stations or shortage of the new licenses. The regulator had licensed over 5 subscription television licensed entities a couple of years ago, which were conditional. I think there was one who was successful, which was CIRTV. They were successful in obtaining the license and meeting the conditions. And CIR has become one of our customers now, and we've signed up an agreement with them this year. They are going to come on board our platform, our DTH platform, into the future. So out of those 5, at least one is showing signs of launching commercial services this financial year.
I think it's your loss of revenue due to dual nation. I've addressed that partly, but maybe just to make an emphasis on that one. We, our revenue is currently largely on analog, so when it comes to television, I mean, radio continues as usual. Cost of dual nation I've spoken about, it's an opportunity that we're losing by not moving to digital fast enough. And also the one of the drivers of the cost is that, if you remember, almost a year ago, the exchange rate, the dollar and dollar exchange rate was sitting at 12 cents per dollar, and we hit about 15 rands per dollar, so that almost 50% increase in the exchange rate affects us directly because we buy supply capacity in dollars. And maybe that's the motivation that we must build our own satellite as a country. There was a question around vacancies. I don't have the exact numbers. Maybe my COO can assist me with the exact numbers. I didn't really put them on my notes here. We have reduced the vacancy rate from what it was. I think it's now below the last stats that we looked at was around 6.5%. So at the level where the vacancies are, because we're trying to manage costs as well, we're looking at it very carefully and saying find ways of being creative to do our work without increasing our fixed costs moving forward. At the management level, most of the vacancies are filled, but at an operational level, technician level, or operator level, we do, I think our executive operations assist us as executives to weigh which ones can we fill first, and we try and manage our exposure to high cost of operations by seeing what can we get away with, because it's always good to employ more people as long as you can continue paying their salaries into the future. But we take a view as a company that we want to manage within our means, so that should our revenue become further challenged, we don't look at people's jobs as a way of achieving sustainability. So really we've got a goal of preserving people's jobs as much and as long as we possibly can. How many females do we have at the executive level? We are busy recruiting, I think there's three vacancies at the executive level. We're busy recruiting, and we've got a bias, I think we have to say this publicly, because it's in terms of our employment equity. We've got a bias towards female candidates in our employment at all levels, because wanting to balance the our employment equity. I think the exact number is around 60-40, Mr. Matavan, you can confirm that. There was a question around the position on strategy. Are you busy implementing strategy and you don't have a strategy executive? That position will be filled by the end of this month. We've had vacancies at the executive level, CFO, strategy, HR and technology, that we've been handing for resources to fill those gaps, and being very careful who we place in those positions so that we don't compromise our organization, and we have managed to find a few candidates who will be making the final announcement as to who has succeeded once we finish the process by the end of this month. Challenge with community radios being unable to pay for the services offered by Centec, but continues to be a challenge for community broadcasters because they don't earn much revenue from advertising, because advertising revenue is driven by the number of audiences that you can present to the media buyers, and therefore the community broadcasters do struggle quite a bit in terms of getting revenue. We have, as Centec has done over the years, and more so lately, a strategy of seeing how we can support them as part of our enterprise or socio-economic development strategy, bring them aboard and subsidize their cost to signal distribution as part of our enterprise development. So we try by all means to support them as much as we possibly can. So there was a question around the coverage of DTT what has happened. Last year we had the 40% plus the plans being GTA's coverage. That is the current coverage because we believe that we've got the country covered now in terms of the infrastructure. What we're doing is we're basically fine-tuning our network so that we can have stability on the network. And also filling some gaps in some areas, but two sites which we're still busy completing, one in the Eastern Cape and another one in Limpopo. So we're busy completing those sites to be able to complete our terrestrial network. And as we manage our network into the future, we don't expect that it will be so sailing. We're expecting that there may be areas, small areas which we may identify as black holes, if you like, which will then have to put in gap fillers into the future. But as for now, in terms of our network plan, we are all covered terrestrially. The FAA area is a priority area, so why the DOC has opted to start there, even in terms of rolling out their set-up box distribution starting in Northern Cape, because we have to make sure that in terms of the agreement, in terms of the law, we get all the wireless services out of the FKA square kilometer area and then keep that as a radio quiet zone as required by the law. I think we've dealt with cost of elimination. Labor relations issues, those remain a challenge for us. We have stabilized the environment as of last year. I think the strategic management did whatever was possible to stabilize the situation. But demands remain between ourselves and labor and the union, where there was a continued demand for a second shift from the organization. So those negotiations are still underway. They are taking quite a bit of time to resolve, and simply because we're trying to make our stakeholder, the union, to understand what we stand as an organization. And we're very willing to pay our workers the best salaries, but we've got to remain sustainable and competitive, and therefore it becomes difficult to increase the cost, the fixed cost, by a certain share moving into the future. But the negotiations are still underway to resolve the issue. There's a question around the targeted bursary program. Just to start answering that one, we have the board has approved a plan, updated our plan on human resources development, where first of all we're saying that our staff members want to support them to further their education. So we've got a policy in place that really looks at improving the capabilities and the expertise of our staff members. We have in the past had an agreement to sponsor learners from universities. We had an agreement with the University of Pretoria and invest, and you ask why those? It's because you are an engineering and infrastructure company, and we basically would be sponsoring engineering students to go and study their engineering degrees in those institutions and then come back to have to do internship. And then the aim is to should there be possible vacancies, then we can fill those vacancies with our own financially supported students. I will be assisted there in terms of the exact numbers if you're just sorry. There's an issue around the KPIs. What are we doing to ensure that Fintech is shielded from these cyber attacks? We have put in place systems within Fintech and also approached the, I think as an IT company, what we've done is how do we make sure that our firewalls as Fintech are secure enough? Because everything that we do is IT based. All our transmitters that you see around the country, they've got an IT component on them, and therefore we have done what is possible and we continue to do so to strengthen the firewall so that no one can break through and have access to our infrastructure. And we, in our upgrade of our internal computer systems and our upgrade of SAP, is one of the areas that we're busy looking at to. We're not there yet, we have failed, but it's a project that we're looking at, as I said, to try and improve our sexuality, our IT security. What are we doing with enemy support? Our ESD strategy, Shepherdson, we have, I think in the past, made sure that we have got a number of small companies who we invite to be part of our program to develop them. We offer a service that is to train them in areas of their need so that they can be ready to participate broadly in the tendering for the services that we'll require for as a center into the future. So, and also our ESD support, I mean, recently we decided that we'll identify companies who operate in the ICT sector, who are smaller companies but who are doing infrastructure development, and see what can support them with. For instance, one of them would say, we're wanting to build our test and measurement capabilities so that we can be able to deploy wireless services, and we don't have those capabilities. And our role as Fintech is that if we enable them to be able to build up their own infrastructure and SME, then we'll be able to bring them on when we require those services as Fintech and ask them to provide those services. So we're very conscious of how we support them. If I may also add to that, there was a question around strategy to benefit SMEs in the sector. We have developed an enterprise supply development strategy that speaks to how we are going to support small enterprises and how we're going to develop them into significant companies. But it has to be said that the environment operating in, it really uses a lot of imported equipment. So what we expect from the original equipment manufacturers is to make sure that the implementation of their services, if you're building a transmitter, the implementation of that transmitter is really done by the locals. So that's really what we're pushing for in terms of the development of the SMEs within this space. And there was a question around the procurement and payment before delivery is verified. This is a project management challenge that I think we have dealt with, because we have a very strict now project management process, which is linked to supply chain management, and that says that commissioning of a service will then be followed by the payment for the service that has been completed. And we don't anticipate any situation where into the future we will have people having been paid for services unrendered or incompletely rendered to Sendex. So we are very strict when it comes to that. The board has decided to uplift the level of supply chain, to say, you know, we need to lift it to the level of the CFO, and we have to look at it strategically, because it could be a bottleneck to our business. And it is, if we look at it as strategic, then it will be a tool for meeting the empowerment requirements. And then for us, it's just not out of the code of good practice, but it is the right thing to do. I think we need to be doing that, not because of the law necessarily. There was an issue around, a concern around dual mission costs, and the question asked what initiatives have been done and what support have received. I think I indicated that the chairman and the board, we've spoken to the department, and the minister is aware of the dual illumination situation, and he is committed to meet with his counterparts both at the DOC and also at National Treasury to emphasize the importance that this project cannot be an unfunded mandate. So we see that as a process that the department continues to engage other stakeholders within government, see that we are assisted. From our side, as Fintech, what have we done? We keep it at the forefront of our communication with our stakeholders, the department, keep them updated and make to a certain extent put a little nudging on them to say, please prioritize us, and they've really come to the party, and we appreciate that from them. I think the chairman has dealt with most of this. The outstanding issue possibly is the number that percentage of males and females do you have at the moment.
thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, CEO. We do have the numbers as at the end of quarter four, which is the end of the month. We'll start with the total number of employees that Centec has is 540. And during that time, we made appointments. We made 9 appointments, of which 13% were internal and 88% were external. And then 89% of the appointments were black, and then 22% of that were black females. And the employment equity status, to date, the company-wide, we've got 81% of the staff in the organization being black, and 35% being black females. And then at the top management level, 100% is black, and 86% of 100% is black female. Senior management, 89% is black, and then 33% is female. And then at the specialist and middle management, 69% of that are black, and then 25% of that are female. And leave them to get to the other question regarding the boundaries. At University of Pretoria, last year we had 5 students, and then unfortunately one passed away. 3 of them managed to go to the next level, and one was not able to go to the next level, so it's repeating the level. And as soon as they pass, the one passed, then we will then implement the boundary and continue with the boundary. At the University, we put up and is that we have 2 students who both continue to the next level. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. I trust that you've covered all the questions asked.
I think I'm going to open for members. There was something that you spoke about in terms of the issue of sourcing local equipment, but what is the feasibility of that, the capacity, and because those are some of the issues. If I look even your impact in terms of the equipment that you use based on the rand dollar value, that is impact on your work. And I remember during the week we heard from even Mustafa, and that has impacted negatively in some of work. But just within the idea, maybe this is what goes to even the case. I remember at some point you're talking, but why haven't we not, as a sector, increased capacity of manufacturing locally? Because this is where we get hit when the rent dollar value goes high, we get impacted upon. But I just heard you speak about the issue of SMMEs, that in terms of provision, do we have enough capacity? It doesn't follow up for me, so that we can have a sense of really what is the status. Honourable members, anyone who has a follow-up, Honourable Shin has a follow-up, Honourable Tosi has a follow-up, Honourable Kim, Kilian, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to go back to the question of dual illumination. Was it originally in previous budgets? If it was there, whose budget was it in, and what happened to that money? It was actually, I suppose, earmarked for dual illumination some time ago. Because it obviously was there, and now it's vanished. And who cut it out? And I just want to query this $140 million a year for dual illumination. Now, is that the cost of having an extra panel, if you like? Or is this the cost of both of them? But I'm saying, if this is going to be stopped dual illumination, you will save 140 million rand a year, or will you only save 70 million rand a year? So if you can just a simple arithmetic thing for me there, please. You talked in page 30 in your report here about waiting timelines for the introduction of IMT services. You're waiting for these. Who's supposed to be giving you the timelines for the introduction of these services? And what is the delay of that? Thank you. I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think from responses, one could simply say impressed about the realistic objectives which are planned within your means, rather than being too ambitious and plan beyond your means. tend to impress us. And when it comes to the term of accounting, and it comes a problem, we really applaud you for that. However, we always have unforeseen circumstances or risks that may tamper with your good plans. Do you anticipate any obstacles moving forward that may tamper with your plans that are not able to implement them within the specified time period that you have set for yourself? And other comment on employment equity. It happens very often that in companies you find that you have a large number of employees being black, women in particular. But when it comes to post levels, when they are at very low level, but while you're looking at the number of employees, they have employed so many people, they're previously disadvantaged. But when it comes to post levels, you find that they're at very, very low levels. Okay.
I would like to go to page 80, your risk management plan in the annual report. And there you have listed some uncertainties which impact on Zentech's business. Now, we have touched on some of them. You have highlighted the impact of the economic downturn and, sourcing from abroad. You have highlighted the issue of the shareholder funding for DTT, et cetera, from government. But I would like to focus on skills availability. You touched on your efforts of additional training for your staff members. But because this is such a rapid moving technological space, it is so important that your talent management and the retention is in place. So even your students that are now studying at universities, what sort of arrangement have you made with them? If you pay for them, how long do they have to pay to work for Zentech in order to make sure that you derive some benefit from your investment in human capital? And then you also list here the technology evolution, and some people will say it's a revolution. So what measures can an entity such as Zentech take to try and mitigate these risks? Because if you look at your system, you're operating two systems already for DTT as well as analog as well as digital. So what additional steps do you see as far as your operations are? And on the next page of page 81, if you can just explain, for instance, on talent management, does that mean you have not taken any steps, or is it just that you have achieved half of what you intend to achieve? And then lastly, reference to your fraud plan. I must say, I'm quite impressed with your fraud plan. Has it yielded any success? The anonymous tipples line, etc. It's working. Because internal checks and balances, if you operate on the basis of, 540 employees, it's very good if you have a cross-reference of employees. But is it working in practice? There are so many ways. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. have you had successful reporting and also follow through on disciplinary action or the necessary steps taken against those who have been found with their hands in the cookie jar? Thank you, Chair.
The Honourable for this and Honourable Shin have one more thing that they forgot. Let me just...
I know that I've forgotten something, but I see here on page 18, my question is actually responded to by the 7 points that it's related here. Maybe you can just talk to others, additional... apart from the one you've already mentioned. Thank you.
No question?
Thank you, Chief. There was one other question I left off. You talked about the fact that the digital broadcast transmission equipment that you had installed for DDT was ending its lifespan, and it would probably need to be replaced here soon. Is that right? That it might be, you talked about replacing the equipment that it was... No, the analog analysis is from it. What is the investment in the DGT or DGH equipment that is now reaching the end of its warranty, should we say, or if it's going to be replaced? Can you say how much you spent on installing digital migration transmission equipment, and what it's likely to cost now with our exchange rate? Have you done a cost on this? And thank you. What kind of lifespan is left for that investment?
Thank you very much, Mr. On page 71, just on the borrowing plans, the impact of this going forward, is this not just, I think it's on the period 2017 to 2019, is it the overall amount which is intended to be borrowed within that period? Or are we saying in terms of repayment? I was trying to understand, what does it say? The company provided for a reasonable amount of short-term borrowings, which will increase to an amount of 163 million during 2017-2019 period. The financial requirement identified are beyond the capacity of internally generated resources. Just to understand, as I know, it's for dual illumination, as well, because it reflects that due to the dual illumination, you had to go and borrow this amount. So just to understand, is it, for example, is it going to give through this amount in terms of if we are to, for example, safely migrate, if we do not migrate, therefore is it going to increase based on this? Just to understand. Because as well, are we intending to go to the banks in terms of this? For that, I'm just trying to understand the impact of this borrowing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe let's back to that question. I'm going to ask the acting CFO just to give us an explanation on what we're talking about in that borrowing plan.
And honorable members. On the issue of the borrowing plan, what we are basically talking about is a situation where we're saying that we've made an assumption that the plan for switching off analog is going to happen by 2018. So therefore, based on the information you gave us today, we will then be saying that obviously, taking into account our CapEx requirement and the need that we say that we need to obviously stabilize our network and everything else, the CapEx of 502 million right, that we talked about this year and everything else, we're saying we're not going to stop. We do not intend to stop all those. However, if we're to still achieve our CapEx plans, it then requires us to be making plans for a short-term borrowing by the year 2019. So it's not so much about that. So obviously we are saying that now you have plans in terms of what we're going to do when that time comes.
Thank you, Skipper. So just to touch on the first question that was asked about what are we doing about the local manufacturing and what and the capacity for the local SMEs, and the fact that we are procuring the equipment from overseas. It's a national question, really, where we as a country, we are the net importers of technology, and therefore we don't make this equipment locally in broadcasting and largely in other areas of the industry. So can we manufacture these transmitters locally? We used to manufacture some of the FM transmitters locally, especially down here in Cape Town, used to have a manufacturing plant for telecommunications and also for transmitters, but most companies aren't manufacturing locally anymore now. I think everybody has gone east to manufacture there, and as a result of that, we importing dollar denominated equipment.
what we do there as local companies, as who are local. What they do is they basically base their businesses on the implementation, that is buying or designing, then procuring from outside, and then doing the implementation and commissioning and maintenance as local companies. So our strategy then at Centec is to make sure that with all the equipment that is bought overseas, at least besides the single that with that equipment happens locally, and we're requiring as part of our supply chain or our ESD that most of our suppliers must keep some stocks locally so that we can be able to have the local support for our transmitter equipment and our technology equipment. So that's the current situation. It is highly unlikely a person that will have these transmitters manufactured locally. It's a strategy that I think the DTI and other government departments will have to come up with and say, how do we stimulate local manufacturing, real local manufacturing, of course, not just assembling. But currently it is not happening at a reasonable scale at all, especially in the area of the equipment that we are using. There was a question about the budget, dual elimination. What was budgeted, who was budgeting for it before? This was a commitment that was made to us, Centec, by the department, I think previously Department of Communications and then DTPS, and I think that was also linked to the commitment made by National Treasury, agreeing that they would fund the dual elimination. So who changed it? I don't think we can answer that. All we can say is that we received notification that because of the pressing needs of the nation, then the dual elimination funding was not made available for the financial aid in full. But the other funding, which is digital-to-digital funding, has been made available for the financial year 2018. So I'm not sure how the budget goes in terms of who changes what budget allocation, but all I can say is that this is within the responsibility of our shareholder, the TTBS, to assist us to get this funding, make it available. There was a question around the cost of the split on the cost of dual elimination. The major cost on this one, Honorable Shin, is the cost of the satellite capacity, the listing of satellite capacity, and also the energy cost. So the dual elimination cost is an operating cost, which close to 8% thereof is from these two areas, which is your satellite capacity cost. So your question you asked is, would it help us to save? I think it's not just that I ask us the same question. Why don't you just switch off this thing until you've got it all ready to? But we can't, because that will basically kill our equipment. Unless we can find other ways and means of reducing the cost of energy consumption. But the thing is that it's a national network, so if you decide to switch it all off, and then when you begin to want to switch on digital and switch off analog, then you are there more or less 7 years at the time when you started establishing the network. So it's not advisable. I think internationally the trend has always been you've got to keep it alive until you switch it off, until you switch off analog. I think the question then is, what's the lifespan of this equipment? I indicated that we don't want to get to a point where we have to replace the equipment, but the equipment will have still have another 5 years into the future, into it, but not all at the same time, because all that equipment was not all installed at the same time. It was rolled out over the years. So there is a phasing in of that maintenance upgrade into the future. And it is working on numbers and implications of this, because we have to say to ourselves, what case scenario, what do we have to do if we were to then begin to replace this equipment? How do we find it? Being sympathetic of the pressures of government in terms of available funds, we're looking at what would be the other options within our classification in terms of the PFNA. we want to repair our equipment, we go out and borrow. What will be the process is so that all the issues that management is worrying about and is working on to say what are the contingencies that we can put in place in order to mitigate the risk that we're facing. Timeline for introduction of IMT services. IMT services, these are directly linked to, I think there was a case that you quoted, so I didn't know. This is directly linked to digital migration, because digital migration will mean that the 800 megahertz spectrum has been made available for telecommunication services, and it has been, that spectrum has been allocated as such by the ITU, and therefore the introduction of IMT is directly linked to us as broadcasters or as Centec vacating our spectrum, and we cannot put any timeline to that because it is linked to digital migration. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, may hamper our progress. I think there was a question relating to that. We're fortunate in a sense, Centec, that we, the board, our board has been careful in putting in place a business unit that looks at risk management, where every year we identify specific risks and look at ways in which we mitigate the risk, and we keep adding onto our risk register all the possible plans, and most of which we have put on the corporate plan, and some of these risks, as they arise, as the things change in the marketplace and in the industry and within our environment, we put in place mitigating factors so that we can be able to keep our business continuing. So you will help us with the other question that sometimes we can hold percentages and only find that we are hiring people at a lower level in terms of our environmental equity. And for us as Centec, we certainly have no interest in cooking the numbers, if I may use that term. We have an interest in putting environmental equity at every level of the organization. So when you say we've got executives who are female, those are genuine executives which we can assign whatever the job path that has been given to them to do, and then they continue to do that once the executive is sitting behind us, our company secretary, which at times I think the title secretary is misleading, because that's an executive who looks at governance for us, and it's a high-level executive who we account to, and then they're assisting our chairman to make sure that governance is in place within the organization. So, in terms of environmental equity, we really don't front, we don't fudge the numbers. We're very serious about it in the organization. The skills availability issue, talent management and retention, is quite tough. I think the Jefferson did indicate that we, as Centec and as a state-owned entity, we need to get to a point where we accept that we're a training ground. And it becomes one of the things that we say this is a target for us to say, what is our contribution to the sector? Because sometimes people come to us, those are state on that team, we don't have all the tax that the private sector will have for. And then they come and pinch our best people, and they go, should we be crying about that or should we celebrate? We cry with one eye and celebrate the other. The other eye that says we're celebrating, it says we've contributed to the sector. The other one that's crying heavily is saying, and it's even red, we are saying we are actually crippled because a high level of resources has left the organization. But can we turn and be miserable? No. We continue to recruit more. We continue to build our own staff internally so that when that happens, we're able to continue to operate as an organization. Otherwise, if we were to say, well, I mean, can we retain our staff? We try by all means to retain our staff. So we don't believe that we pay our staff badly. I think we've looked at the research and compared with the average standards in the sector, we believe that we pay our staff well. But we have a limit to that well-paying. So if we can't pay what the private sector is paying, then unfortunately we can't retain our staff. But we have other ways of retaining them. As we said, we wanting to help them to study further, but you could say that shooting yourself on foot, you equip them to study further, now they are ready for the private sector. But we are in the same country, why should we be too aggrieved by that? You will be aggrieved, I'll be aggrieved as a CEO that I'm losing my good stuff that I've spent money on them. But what we do then with our sponsorship is to say, in the current and new policy, is to say to them, whatever years that you have spent being funded by the organization, you have to spend that year within the organization, and then kind of let's reap the benefits of us quitting you as a staff member in our environment. Additional threats to us, I mean, technology evolution and technology revolution, what are the additional threats to our business as center? I think the threat to us currently is, we all know that because we are a signal distributor, DTP must work for us. We have to make sure that it works. And we also take a view that as a country strategically, we've got to stay terrestrial, because what is terrestrial you can control. What is in the sky is beyond control. So we want to keep that balance and make sure that strategically we focus on terrestrial control infrastructure, which is cost effective. So we keep managing whatever we identify as our threats. I think based on what we have indicated as our threats, we don't have those which we can say they are higher than what we've mentioned in our corporate plan, but we keep monitoring them as we move forward to our business. Obviously, for any business, in the current environment is a big threat for us. The exchange rate is a big threat. If our rating of the country changes, all those issues, the macro issues are affecting us directly. But I will stay away from the economy. I'm an engineer. The issues around talent management, what are we doing there? I've mentioned that we are doing our best to make sure that we manage talent, we provide opportunities, and we have also increased the level of visibility within our organization for process and training our technicians. We're wanting to move into that space as an organization, and we have got great support from our board to be able to be a technology company who has got highly competent technical people. Please assist me. There was a question around fraud prevention and what are we doing for those who might be putting their hands close to the cookie jar. We just hide the cookie jar and then we can far away from access. By fraud prevention plan and also the whistleblowing activity, they are helping us. I think everybody is knowing that they know what we are watching, and we haven't had serious issues of criminal activities within the organization lately. But maybe there might be some issues on the financial side from CFO that you may want to add.
Thanks, Leo. I think from a outline point of view, we make this a standard item in our committee meetings where through an internal audit function, we get reports in terms of any issues that were raised through a hotline anonymously, whereby a process has taken place. And I think the CEO will just confirm what you are saying, that the issues that we've had have not mainly been about finances and so forth disappeared. However, it's something that we constantly allow our internal audit function to provide assurance that whatever matter is being reported, people have accepted, but also they investigated fully. And based on that, we are able to take appropriate action. And since I've been at Fentech, which has been placed for the past 2 years, we haven't really had a significant matter that has come through the online that's required. Or that led to us losing financial resources
of
the company.
Gee, I think usually it comes with contracts being awarded, etc. Now, do you have the necessary systems in place to ensure that they cannot be padding of invoices, etc.? You have all of that in place, and your committee, your audit and your risk committee, they function properly. So, I mean, as far as that is concerned, you cover it. Is that what you tell us as well? Thank you.
Just a response.
Chairperson, as far as what we've experienced is that the functioning of the audit and risk committee and also the engagement of the internal audit function have been function, and the board we've had the necessary responses, and delivery whenever those functions were called into account. So and like the acting CFO pointed out that there were some reports to the hotline, but they were mostly around people issues and not about financial misappropriation or things like that. So thus far, we've been fortunate in that that has not been the case.
Thank you very much. I think the deliberation is quite assisted. As I said earlier on, the quality of the document does it, because once you read a strategic plan that is very clear, most of the issues are covered and you are able to do a proper oversight on certain matters. And you can sense from the discussion more emphasis and all more concern we have is around the fact that now Centec is likely to face a challenge because of this dual illumination issue. And I sense even from the report is your concern as well that we have. But I think we'll do our best from our side as we engage on the GTT program. As I said, it can be like the efficiency of a company now is becomes its weakness, or because you are efficient, therefore you are now suffering. Because other areas lag behind in making it a deadline that everybody has had. So I think that's the issue that I just wanted to say. We'll definitely select. It's got something on us today.
Listen, I just want to support you on your comments and your wrap-up. And I just want to say, it is very good to see where Centec finds itself. If we look back 5 years, 6 years ago, Centec, well, maybe it could be seven, I can't even remember, but Centec took a very bad turn, supposedly. Very bad turn. There was governance issues. There was a resignation, the one on top of the other. It was just a toxic system in the management and in the board. And it is just good to see when such institution is picked up and people are committed, the systems are put in place, and I really have to commend them for that. And really, this is not because I need any signal anywhere. It's just to commend them for the management for what they've done. Thank you, Chief, and the board.
No, that's fine. As I was saying, the issue here for me is mainly around how the institution is being run and re-emphasizing PDG, the issue of best practices across the entities as we deal with other entities, so that if something is happening correct somewhere, surely should be able to lend those experiences to others, because it really helps us to even be able to do our work. To a team of Centec, thank you very much. I remember we raised some concern to say, hey, we were talking to the minister at some point, that there's changes of the board, chair and members, there's changes in the CEO, and I remember very well at that time, the COO was saying, no, we've been working as a team with the existing CEO, but it definitely shows that it's a team that is at work. And thank you very much for the work that has been done at Centec. And we are done with your corporate plan. Members, do you want to take 5 minutes break, and then I just want us to get into the minister. There are issues I need to brief you on, and then we can decide the way forward in terms of minutes. Just 5 minutes. And then the team center can depart if they want to depart.
Members. Members would note that we had planned to have an annual performance plan for NEMISA in the afternoon from 2 o'clock. We've got the CEO and the acting CFO here. The chairperson of the board is on the way. The acting chairperson of the board is on the way, in light of us requesting them to be here too. But as I thought, it's important, members, start to bring this to your attention. I looked at the documents and the quality of the document as expected. I was really concerned. You'd note that the document was PP'd, which is not acceptable because the accounting officer must write. The second issue, the targets and the structure. Now, following that, I had an engagement with the department together with the CEO around my concern. I was alerted that possibly because of the changes, the CEO has resigned, CFO has resigned, the board chairperson has resigned. So we have these colleagues that are acting the problem. But as well, they are currently, you remember members, that last year we approved the merger with INES, the establishment of INES. they are right in the middle of it. They raised that as one of their issues. They brought the document as a form of compliance. To say because they've got an appropriation that is appropriate, they felt that something needs to be tabled when there is a concern around the quality. Now, they are in the process of re-establishing UNIS. In the middle of that, that's why we couldn't put quite firm and clear targets into the document that we have. And you know, as with me, always at least a particular quality of documents, not for compliance. And therefore, my request for them is either they withdraw the document, because I don't appropriate for us to process the document in the state of that it is. And that's what I'm saying to colleagues. Let's have a discussion around it. You can see I did look at it. I made some comments and I'll try to consult around it. And I raised those concerns with both the DDG, Shelembe, and the acting CEO. That's to say, how do we manage the situation? Because either we can say to them, we bought the document, because and then we resubmit. Therefore, we have to discuss how do we deal with that. Do we want to process it, because we can't take that decision alone. Do we want to process it in the stature that it is, which for me, I think, would be compromising the quality of oversight, but if members are comfortable, therefore they will have to indicate if they are comfortable with the document that we have. Because quite frankly, I just feel the explanation is saying, check, we have an appropriation, we thought we need to submit something, but they are in the middle of establishing an entity. Therefore, we are looking at the mandate, how the entity is going to be done, the structure and everything else, and therefore we are right in the middle of that, which is compromising what we are submitting. So I'm bringing it to the attention of members so that we can discuss and see if we do agree with my proposal of withdrawing the document, not processing it, agree with appropriation to be under the GDPR and request a resubmission so that we ask the department to consolidate and conclude this re-establishment and table the document that is clearer that we can be able to accept. Because if we accept this in the middle of the year now, NEMISA will be gone and INES will be in. Now, that's another issue, so that's why I'm proposing this approach, members. And I'd like to open for comments from members. Honorable Shin, Honorable Shuela, Honorable Shoti.
Thank you, Chair. Can you give us the reasons why the three top people resigned? I mean, the board, the CFO, and the CEO. There's obviously something seriously structurally wrong, or with their mandate, or something. They don't have all three abandoned the ship at the same time. So we can have some indication as to what the problem is. And yes, I would support your proposal that we don't continue with the interrogation plan.
The explanation I got from the resignation of the chairperson of the board was that she had taken up the responsibility, but in the process somehow she ended up with a lot of responsibility. And she felt that she is not able to consider NISA in the state that it is making with INES. It needs somebody who has time to focus on it. It's not an entity that is already functioning, that you do not have the chair have to sit continuously. So apparently she felt that the work there is too much. The CFO explanation about got a better offer somewhere because NES is not paying much, so got that. The explanation that I couldn't get clearer was of the CEO who resigned and left, I think, as well over better opportunities. That's more or less what I got as the explanation. DDGVA can elaborate. I asked those questions and that's the response that I got. DDG, you want to say something?
Thank you very much. And essentially, I'm going to echoing your response here. From we have gleaned reasons of resignations, of course, from the correspondence that the people who are resigning have forwarded to the Minister of Attention. So it is correct that the chairperson felt that she has too much workload on her plate and decided to request the minister to release her from her responsibilities insofar as NEMISA was concerned. It is great again that the CFO left for green pastures and she got a better offer, which even when the organization would have attended to, we would not have been able to match because it exceeded even the CEO's salary. So it was not possible to match that offer. It's the same thing with the CEO chair. we understand that he has family business that he has decided to go and run as opposed to working full-time at NEMESA. So those were the reasons given in the correspondence that was forwarded to the Minister for the Resignation. Thank you very much.
Honorable Protege, and then noted Honorable
Chairperson, as you read the document in PT, in terms of that, what would be the legal implication regarding the legitimacy of the document? And one of the reasons that a person who come for the interview be recommended and in no time the person leaves, I think it's time and money to call people for interviews. And it's unfortunate that you don't play a role in the appointment of the board members. But in terms of the contract, is there anything that binds someone to be with the board for a certain sort of time, like 2 years or 3 years, before one considers to resign or something? But more important is the richness of the document if it's not signed by the relevant person. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. I wanted to support the earlier proposal so that we give them an opportunity to deal with the processes at hand. It will be useless for us to deal with this situation at the moment with the kind of uncertainty hanging on the mission, because they may disappear in the near future, and we will not be able to do oversight on them. Perhaps it would be wise just to give them that space. And with regard to the resignations, it is regrettable that people do accept position and in no time they just leave causing chaos, particularly in this institution, so that it's actually unable to perform its function. Thank you, Chair.
I wanted to support you on your proposal, and secondly, I wanted to confirm we have a very peculiar situation in that actually it's an entity that is transforming itself into something new, so it would be very strange for us to have a plan and then to hold the new entity accountable to this plan. I would support you on that. Just as far as the rest is concerned, is it adequate for us to then just make sure that there is a provision for that in the departmental plan, and that process-wise we would be fine, in fact, to not go through the plan and deliberate extensively on it, but that it would be covered in the rest of our report on the budget. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Chairperson. Looks like the support of your proposal is unanimous. I think, in terms of the resignations of these individuals, when were their resignations submitted to the Minister? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. The resignations of the CEO and the CFO were submitted in the course of February, which we're going to be with effect at the end of the month, February. So we received those in the course of February. The chairperson, if I'm not mistaken, resigned earlier than the two executives. It must have been in January sometime. So I hope I'm right. Chair, thank you.
Were exit interviews done with these three or not? Did we just let them go? Just find out if there's some deeper problem.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to comment on the resignation date. It seems to me not only unethical but immoral for the people who hold those kinds of executive positions to actually abandon ship just before they're due to appear before Parliament. And I think some sort of statement or some sort of comment, a very strong comment against those particular individuals should come from this committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, I think Because normally the standard typically is that if you are to leave at a place of work, you normally give a 30 days notice, for example. So your response in terms of saying they submitted to MISA by mid-February, by end of February, they were gone, it's just, yeah, it doesn't occur well. It's very odd in terms of the principles of people who work, you know, in the industry, or even anywhere. And I think one of the things as I'm alluding to this here, I'm going to give us an advice. There's a need for teachers to work closely with the industries. Because it's not coming out very clear. It's not shown. Standards in terms of what needs to be done. And we always are available for engagement. Where the department needs to engage the committee, let's not do things for compliance. Let's go through the process. Let's look. If the department is unsure, let's engage so that we avoid certain things because we could have requested a later table for this entity in the space that it tries itself. So I'm just encouraging a close working relationship between the entities and the department, and as well between the department and the portfolio committee, so that we constantly make sure that we do not, because I really feel like that we are canceling the meeting, but we don't have an option because we have to look at the documents as we receive them. We can't look at them way in advance because there are quite a number of documents that we go through. And unfortunately, the team had already flown to Cape Town, and this is a waste of resources. We'd have loved to have avoided this in time, so that if we are able to pick up some of these things, we pick them up in time. But unfortunately, because of the pressure and the time that we are, you know, we came back from research, we started the process, and you go through documents as they come, and as the meeting dates approach, and you find these things. So it becomes difficult to be proactive and avoid such waste, and we do not want to find ourselves as well. I mean, even members here. Because if we pick them, we could have asked for someone to come this afternoon, and members would be released tomorrow, so it would have been a quite better option for us. But in those few words, thank you very much, members, for noting that it's an anonymous agreement that we do not consider this, and definitely we'll make sure that in our report on our meetings, we do come out very strong in this, because I think when people take responsibilities, at least there must have some level of commitment to the responsibilities, and really give an employer or as a whole an opportunity to find a replacement and put things in place even before they are able to leave. Thank you very much, members. I think we are done for today. The meeting is adjourned.